Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 87th episode of the Manor Podcast. I'm your co-host, Roger Bodie, joined as always with my best friend and other co-host, Michael Hamilton. Michael, I have some chocolate I need to eat, so I'll probably just be eating it. I can't talk right now. I got anger.
Stop. We got to record a podcast. Eat chocolate before or after, not during. That's rude.
It's so good, though. Josh Scott said I could eat it whenever I want.
So not during the podcast. Stop.
But it's too good. I can't not stop.
Okay.
Okay. Last bite for now. I'll finish it later.
We could just record when you're not eating the chocolate. We can just pause, come back in a couple minutes.
No. I'm going to keep eating this chocolate for forever. I'm going to savor it.
If you eat it forever, you're gonna run out if you keep eating it.
That's not true. If I take like little mini pieces like this, it'll last me. Okay.
The smallest piece of chocolate.
Still good. Have you finished your Josh Scott chocolate yet?
No, I've eaten like two rows of it so far. Well, I shared a lot of the first row, but I've eaten two rows. I think I'm going to put it in my fridge, keep it in my fridge, and then just like take a little cube off every now and then. It's really good, though. Thank you, Josh, if you're listening.
So we just won a Pro Tour, right? You and I, we met in the finals of the Pro Tour just like we were planning. Everything went exactly according to plan and was perfect the whole weekend, and neither of us hit Viscerai with no blues in our deck or had any issues or negative variants, and we played perfectly the entire time.
No, those are not the things that happened. Unfortunately.
So it was all just a dream. So you know how sometimes people are like, oh man, this good thing happened. Is this a dream? It was actually just a dream for me.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, like we did go to the Pro Tour. We had a good time, but I would say our Pro Tour tournaments did not go particularly well.
No, you at least made day two.
Yeah, I had a pretty good start day one. I went 5-2. I lost my camera match at the KO Mirror, and then I went 2-1 in my draft and won the rest of the rounds. But that was it. A good day one, not a good day two.
Yeah. Oh, well, it was a good run. So I guess the episode that we're going to release about why we played the decks we did didn't go live because I was panicking about what version of Bolton I wanted to play because I thought I was going to be hybrid and then, I thought I was going to be Raiden and then I was like, no, Raiden's awful. I can't beat Kasai and a couple other decks. I need to play hybrid. And then I played hybrid for a week, was happy for it. And it was the day before the Pro Tour and I was like, I should go back to Raiden. It was literally like Thursday night. I locked back in on Raiden because I was like, I think Kasai was a horrible deck for the Pro Tour. Like Kasai was just like an actively bad choice for this particular tournament. So being dead to that matchup, I didn't mind just because I didn't think there would be a lot there and it'd be pretty unlucky to get paired into a Kasai. I thought overwhelmingly the tournament was going to be KO and Dromai and that wound up being the case. I would say the deck we really didn't see coming, though, was the Great Axe Dorinthea being as popular as it was, huh?
Oh, it was Hatchet's Dorinthea that was the most popular.
Oh, sorry. Version. Some particular build of Axe Dorinthea. Yeah.
Yeah, the Hatchet of Body, Hatchet of Mind Dorinthea. I think they had two copies in the top eight. Yeah.
Yeah, finished second.
Yeah. So we definitely didn't expect that deck to be very good. Or I don't know if we should say to be very good, but it was not like part of our testing regimen.
No, not really. I know you were happy with our testing schedule overall this go around, but I feel like we were a little bit directionless this time.
Yeah. We could probably do a whole episode on like how our testing process went as a team and like what we learned from it and what things went well, what things didn't go well. But I think that's maybe a topic for another day.
Yeah, we got to settle some things out and then we'll address some team prep and testing. So let's just focus on the actual Flesh and Blood cards this time because nobody wants to talk about dumb teams anymore anyways. So the actual tournament itself, you played KO and you did not play Cast Bones, right? You were a boneless KO.
Yes, I was a boneless KO. I guess it feels weird to talk about this again because we recorded an episode, the episode before I left, because and you said that part of why it didn't get published is because you were so wishy-washy on the deck. Well, the reason we couldn't re-record it was because I went to Dallas a week early to go hang out with Brody and Michael and play the PTI event at Battle Hardened. So I was just...
We could have re-recorded it. I had my travel microphones on me. It's right in my bag. And I was like, Michael, let's go record a podcast with my travel microphones. And you're like, no, I hate you, Roger. I'm not spending any time with you this weekend unless I have to. And then we never hung out the whole weekend.
We played Blood on the Clock Tower together. What do you mean we didn't hang out the whole weekend?
That's not one-on-one Roger Michael time. I'm used to cuddling with you and staying with you and hanging out with you and seeing the first face before I go to sleep or when I wake up and the last face I see before I go to sleep. That's what the Michael Hamilton travel experience I'm used to.
You were welcome to stay at the Airbnb. You just arrange different plans. That's not on me.
That's true. I did enjoy hanging out with Justin. Yeah. From AGE. It was a good time.
Yeah, Justin.
You should have stayed with Justin from AGE.
I was not invited to stay with Justin from AGE.
I still have his keys. I have his keys to his apartment right here.
Why did you bring his keys? Oh.
I forgot they were in my bag. And because just in case he and I ever got separated, he gave me like keys That's to fair. Get into his place. And then I forgot to give them back. So now I just live there, I think. I think I'm just welcome there anytime I want to go.
I mean, you do have a key, so checks yeah. out. Mm-hmm.
No, I'll probably just mail back to him.
That also makes sense. But yeah, I played a KO deck. I was really happy with my KO deck. I think the most notable parts of it are it has no copies of Cast Bones. We played 6 copies of Bear Fangs, 3 reds, 3 yellows. I think that it's one of the strongest cards in KO, just... off a 2-card hand, you get 9 value out of the red, 8 value out of the yellow. I think it's really strong. It's a good arsenal target. It's great with agility tokens. And the yellow is just like a card that I'm always happy to draw off my Blood Rush Bellow because it either pays for the attack or is the attack. It does both roles really well. So yeah, my tournament didn't go too hot. I went 4-2 in draft and 4-4 in constructed. I think 3 of my losses, I can point to play mistakes that probably just cost me the game straight up. In my first KO mirror on camera, I messed up the end game with like pulping wild ride stuff. I rolled Scabskins and it was actually on stream. I rolled Scabskins, hit 4 and I played a Bear Fangs. And if I don't, and then I had a pulping in my arsenal, I played a Bear Fangs with 1 floating and I could have tunic clawed, but I tunic pulpinged instead, which meant that I was playing the pulpit without the might token. So my opponent was able to block it out with all of their armor and go to 3, which notably is 1 point above the reckless swing range of the deck. And I had 2 copies of reckless swing in my deck. So if instead I wait to play the pulpit with a might token, that'll leak 1 more damage and the reckless swing is lethal. And I think I probably get there in that game if I take that line instead. And then my other games were not covered because I was pretty dead in the tournament. I think I was X3 by the time we were playing more constructed in day 2, and I messed up a KO mirror kind of badly. I just missed 2 good hat opportunities and instead had it at a bad time, which is really important to get your hat value in KO mirrors. And then I lost 2 in Azalea that played really well, but I literally didn't realize they were on New Horizon until like turn 2 of the game instead of Skullbone Crossref. And you should probably know what hat your opponent's on. And I made some bad decisions there as well. And then those were the 3 rounds I think I lost by punting. And then I sideboarded 4 Dorinthia as if they were Dawnblade when I should have been. I think if I was more alive for the tournament, maybe I would have been more aware of what the Dorinthia decks alive were. But turns out if you side for Dawnblade and they're on Great Axe, you're pretty fatigable. So, oops. The game was really fun, though. Both of my games when I was dead or very dead, both of my opponents were quite pleasant and I had a good time, but oh well.
Yeah. Oh well. Like you said, not everybody is always going to do extremely well at the Pro Tour, and it's just super hard to, even day 2 of Pro Tour, it turns out. And my day one, I lost round two on coverage. And so it was not a good day for the M&R cast on coverage. Both of us were big old coverage losers that day. I will say, sorry, I want to make sure. Jordan Long, my opponent, did not want to be on coverage that round. He was extremely nervous and even asked the judge beforehand, like, can I not? This is the Pro Tour, and I'm already nervous to play in the Pro Tour. And this is the Roger Bode. I can't lose to Roger Bode. If I lose to Roger Bode on camera, people will know I'm one of the worst flush and blood players of all time. So I did my best in the feature match area to joke around, keep things light and friendly. And I think I even let him have a tunic counter or something like that after a miss trigger, like whatever. Yeah, but he talked to me afterwards and he's like, thank you for, you know, being friendly and understanding about that. And I was like, you know what, man, at the end of the day, it's just a game. And that to me is worth more than winning my round two at a Pro Tour. Because there'll be other Pro Tours, there'll be other opportunities for me to do well at events and things like that down the line. This wasn't like my last swan song event. At least I hope not. Otherwise, something's gone terribly wrong. But it's just, I think even at the highest level, you don't have to give like tunic triggers or anything like that. Like if you, like, I don't fault you for playing to that degree at Pro Tours. But at the end of the day, no matter what level you're playing at, the Pro Tour and Armory Worlds, you should still be friendly and welcoming to your opponent. And I think that's one of the most important things to always keep in mind when you're playing.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between like not giving take backs or missed triggers and being like rude to your opponent. Like I had a couple opponents who I was not playing very well this weekend, and I would attack with my Kasai Saber, and then like a few seconds went by and I'm like, Can I activate Kasai? I forgot to activate Kasai. And they're like, no. And I'm like, but they were nice about it. And I'm like, that's fine. That's very reasonable. Yeah, yeah. I just forgot to use my thing. And I do think that's part of playing the game at a Pro Tour level. You're expected to just like take your actions in the order you want to activate them and not miss things that you want to do. It's just, and if you do miss them, that's kind of on you, and you should try your best not to do that.
For sure. And then in round four, I got paired into Will Bradshaw on Azalea, and it was just like turn zero, red in the ledger for 14, and I just had like cards that didn't block very well, or he had the combat trick with the Rainblazers to push it over, and just it was just a cavalcade of me not playing the game from start to finish, so that game wasn't great. And then we go to draft, and one Brendan Patrick is in my draft pod, and I thought there were more issues in other people's draft pods than there were, because I wound up, long story short, there wound up being an issue with one of my packs where in pack three, there were only three class commons left, and it was two warrior cards, one brute card, and no guardian card. So there were no...
This was your pack one, pick three, right?
Yeah, sorry. Did I say pack three?
Yeah.
Yes, sorry. Pack one, pick three. So in a normally collated pack, you know, there's supposed to be five class cards. So I thought that meant that one of the people before me took a brute card, and then one of them took a guardian card to hard signal, since it would be the only guardian card in the pack at that point. And I was like, okay, cool. So I know that there's probably a brute and a guardian ahead of me. I should be warrior. There's a red edge ahead in this pack. And the pack was just very deep for warrior overall. I move into warrior. Great. Lo and behold, it turns out neither of my two pod mates were in guardian. And my pod actually went 4-4, four warrior, poor brute, all the way up until I think halfway through pack two, when Brendan Patrick pivoted into guardian at that point. And yeah, so it was just that weird thing with the pack. Oh, and I guess I didn't mention that was a replacement pack, because the person two to my right counted their cards initially, and there were 16 cards in their pack, so not supposed to be that many cards. So we get the replacement pack, and then there were issues with that pack. So it was just a weird thing. I was going to go a lot harder on this topic, but Brian on Twitter said that they are actively working on making sure that stuff like this doesn't happen. And it seems like the common consensus was that the PACs were really good and the coalition for this did match boxes overall. When I was talking about it at the Pro Tour, I guess I was complaining and people were like, yeah, draft is really bad. But people didn't add the context that their prior experiences with draft were bad. I just thought they meant they were still continuing to be bad. But it was more like, well, in Nationals, there was this horrible experience. Or in Uprising, there's this horrible experience. And I just was missing that distinction. So I'm glad it's getting better, at least. But, you know, maybe next time I will have the correctly sorted and collated pack.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't realize that we were actually getting 24 boosters from the same box, but it makes sense with how the packs were labeled, like draft one pod number or whatever. So like they were just like taking a box and making the pod out of them. And thinking back, none of my drafts were like, this is the fifth red concuss or anything like that. It did seem like ratios and numbers of things appearing that would naturally be open when you just open a box together. So I think LSS has taken our feedback on that and actually done a really good job. I kind of wish I knew that they were doing that, because honestly, our practice has become like, a lot of the time we'll take like two boxes and we'll take half the packs from one box and half the packs from another box to try to like mimic the randomness that we expect from drafts at this point. But overall, moving to trying to use one full box per pod is a great change, and I think it's closer to an authentic draft experience that we'll see at like armories or wherever people are drafting.
Yeah. And to take out some of the human element that's going to happen with just the very manual process where the judges have to, you know, open the packs and then stamp and then close them and check for like any damage cards and make sure everything's kosher that way. I think it would be cool. I just kind of came up with this idea when I was more fiery about the topic, but like if LSS printed like Pro Tour draft boxes that had like an LSS like gold stamp or something at the bottom, and you could only get like these gold stamped like pre-packaged cards. So this way you could just open the box at the table, hand out your packs, and know that the only way to get these cards would be in these drafts. So you can't like add them, because that's the whole reason why they do the stamping, right? And this thing is that they want to make sure that people aren't taking extra cards from outside the game and be like, ooh, look, I have like five agile engagements and three red edge aheads and perfect blue counts that only block three. It was a really good draft, you know? So I don't know. I don't know what the cost to break down for that would be versus paying the judges, but it'd be cool.
Yeah, it would be really cool if they did something like that. I think that would have another issue where like you'd have to print like different print runs of these things for what day of the event they are, because otherwise people could still sneak in their like Pro Tour day one draft cards into day two. And that's why they use different color stamps based on the day.
I see what you're saying.
So I think it would be a lot of extra work. I know Magic towards the end of like the end of the pre-COVID tournament era was using like machines to like both stamp and even register your pools for you, which was really cool for the sealed events. But
oh, really?
Yeah. I know some of my later sealed events, I just got, it was like a little like case that just had six packs worth of open cards and they were already registered. They're just like, here's your,
yeah, I remember that code. And it was, but they really weren't cool. Stamped or anything.
They weren't stamped. I guess they don't need to be stamped unless you get, I guess you, maybe they do need, maybe they would still need to be stamped. It doesn't work for draft.
I thought stamping was only for day two drafts, well, for like everything. Cause they like, even in sealed normal tournaments, like you're never getting stamped cards for sealed tournaments, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. They could stamp them though. If a machine can scan and register a pool, it can definitely stamp them.
You build the machine then, Michael. You build it.
I have been doing a lot of programming, but I haven't done like physical robotics work. That would be pretty cool too.
Look at that. Take
on as a project though.
So didn't do well in the class constructed. 1-2'd my draft. There were four warriors and I played against KO, Betsy, and then a KO. And, you know, sometimes you don't get paired into the other horrible warrior decks in your pod, but that's okay. So I play the calling and I lose round one to Max because he Teclo mech'd up and dealt like 50 damage to me before I Lumina Ascension comboed him. So that was not a great start. Win my next two and then get paired into Kaiser. Yeah, Kaiser Wong from Team Blue Pitch. And Kaiser's on Victor, and I've been destroying Victors on Bolton, man. I can't even tell you the last time I lost to a Victor, and it's the end of the game. I got like 10 cards left in my deck. I'm remembering my pitch deck, and I'm like, oh, yeah, so this card isn't Lumina Ascension. I need to use Beacon because Lumina Ascension's two cards down. And then I go for I have Via the Vanguard and double Lumina Ascension all lined up, and my opponent's only at like 22. And I'm like, okay, cool. This should be perfect amount of damage to kill them. They shouldn't be able to live through this. I'm going to do it. I crack my energy potion. So I get two resources. I use the first resource to crack, not Braveforge Bracers, Gallantry Gold. Yeah. And then I attack with my Via the Vanguard and I charge one card and I'm like, cool, we did it. And then I'm like, oh, wait a second. I forgot to crack Courage of Bladehold, like a dum-dum. And so then I have to break the combat chain, crack my Courage of Bladehold, play my Lumina Ascensions, and I wind up not killing him by like three life. And I have one card left in my deck at the end of my combo, and it's one red Blade Flurry, and I lose. But you know what? What are you going to do? Know how to play the game?
If only you had six more damage that turn from something like a Via the Vanguard buffing your sword attacks by plus one.
If only.
Unlucky, really.
So I'm tilted. I'm sad. I'm 2-2. I scrubbed the Pro Tour. I'm 2-2 in this calling. It's just not my weekend so far. And so basically I have to win out day one to go 6-2 in order to day two the calling. Well, I do that, and then I start day two, and I get paired into Dromai, and I am like 0-5 into Dromais at this point in like constructed like rated events. Like I double lost to it in the Battle Harden. It killed me in like callings and art. Like I am just getting destroyed by Dromais, but I won. I did it. I beat a Dromai round one of day two, so that I'm still X and two. And if I win out all the rest of my rounds, cool, I get to still make top eight. I win my next one, but then I lose into Dio. I am not very practiced into Dio, it turns out, and I did not know what I should be doing in that game. I didn't know if I could fatigue with my package, or if I just had to like combo race, or if like even if just like a raid and beat town was the plan. I really just need more reps into that hero. So I think I just lost that match because of just like knowledge and experience.
I do think, for what it's worth, all the Bolton gamers in the world, I think you should be trying to Saber's combo against Dio. I don't think you can block out fatigue from the start.
Yeah, I should have pivoted more toward. I was like blocking with like Lumina Ascensions at the end of the game, just like trying to go for the fatigue. And I just, the third maximum velocity, you know, pretty good. So, oh well, dead for top eight, you know, still live for cash, play the rest of my tournament, win the next two. Get paired into Dave Lynn from the Wolfpack in the last round on KO. I've been crushing KOs all weekend. Raiden just destroys KO because you just race them and you race them, and then you get to the end of the game and you say, I can block you all I want, KO, and then you can't block me at all because you have pearls and only attack actions to block with. So if you try to block me, you get hard punish and I win the race. It's a very clean plan. I like it. I've implemented it implemented it very successfully over the weekend, and Dave picks up a dice and says scabskins, and he hands it to me, or maybe I pick up the dice, I don't know. I roll a scabskin leathers for him and I roll him a six, and he gets three action points and deals like 15 damage to me in that turn cycle, and I lose the game. And you know what, it is what it is.
Yeah, scabskins is sure a piece of equipment. It's power level, it's probably the best boots in the game. Maybe Valiant Dynamo has an argument for being up there. Valiant Dynamo, because we saw it blocking like 6-8 life or damage in some games this weekend. Some probably sometimes more. I didn't see more than that, but it blocks a lot. So maybe it's the second best use in the game right now, but it's not very it's not very fun.
Not particularly. I feel like every time I saw all the scab skins, people just sighed. They're just like, this is so dumb. Why am I doing this? And then they just win. And
or they just roll one and die. That's also in the range.
Yeah. So it was a good run. Wound up finishing 24th. Not bad. I just wanted, especially after scrubbing a pro tour, it felt good to at least like get like a solid finish. And, you know, I feel like right now, like, you know, that meme picture where it's just like the guy who's like spraying champagne everywhere and biting his metal and kissing a girl. But then he's like third place on the podium and the other two people are like, what are you doing? That's what I feel like right now. I feel really good despite about having a super marginal finish because I made more money on the weekend than Michael Hamilton. So, you know what? Can't complain.
Well, I didn't make any money. So that's not a hard.
There you go.
Pass. I made day two of the pro tour and did pretty bad in day two of the pro tour, 3 and 4 in day two to get like 90th something or 100th place. And then on Sunday I was like, do I want to wake up to play a Living Legend Battle Hardened? You offered me an Icelander deck I could play.
And $100 to play it.
Ben Hannon offered me a Control Starvo deck to play, which I like Control Star. I've played that guy a lot. It's a good time. But Saturday night, we decided to play Blood on the Clock Tower. And you see, we started this game at like 10 p.m. And this game ended at like 2 something in the morning. And when that game ended at 2 something in the morning, after my long fight to triumph over the village as the imp, that was not always the imp, but was originally the Scarlet Woman, I was going to sleep and I had no intentions of waking up to play the Battle Hardened at 9 a.m. the next day. So instead I slept in and then the morning I woke up, I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but I think Ellie reached out to me, Ellie Bird, and she said that there was cube drafts going on. And I was like, I love cube drafts. So we went, me and Ben actually went over and met Oliver and some other people doing cube drafts there. And we played a sweet Katsu 1v1 cube. And then we drafted, it's called Midwinter Cube, I think, with Azalea, Lexi, Icelander, and Kano. It was a great time. I was glad they had us. And I was much happier with sleeping in and doing that than trying to wake up at 9 a.m. to play the Battle Hardened off no sleep and also not knowing anything about the Living Legend format.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame that I got 24th at the calling, because if I did scrub, at least I knew I would have won the calling on Icelander. Oh, well, there'll be another Living Legend tournament to win on Icelander. I think an Icelander bubbled on 9th in the tournament. I think the deck is good. And I think if chains aren't respecting it and people aren't practiced into their Icelander matchups, I think she's actively good. Especially if Lexis aren't running Trench in their sideboard, because then like if you're running cards like Encase or Icebind, you can really just lock them out of entire turn cycles. So yeah, it sucks you only get one channel like Frigid, one Hyperthermia, and one Warmonger's Diplomacy in that format. But if you think about it like that, like just get rid of Hyperthermia and Warmonger's Diplomacy and just think about like just you have three really impactful blue pieces of disruption. So you'll see those as about as often as you would see your three channel like Frigids anyways. You just don't get 12 copies of it. And like that seems fine.
Yeah, it's not the chain matchup I'm concerned with as Icelander. I think Icelander can be built to be favored in the chain. It's just like how do you beat the Lexis and the Starvos, which I think both those matchups are horrible for Icelander.
Well, you get Amulet of Ice back into Starvo, and I need to practice that matchup a good amount just to see if like the hand disruption plan is like good into him. Lexi's, I don't know, like I said, I'm mostly just planning on them not having Trench. I imagine if they do have Trench, then Lexi's quite probably good into Icelander, because in Classic Constructed Lexi was good into Icelander, and I don't think Amulet of Ice does much of anything because Voltaire could be activated at instant speed. So yeah, I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, I don't even think the Lexis need Trench anymore, because the reason they had Trench was to fight the three copies of Warmonger's Diplomacy. And when you're only playing one copy, like you're going to get them sometimes, but like Channel was your best card against Lexi, followed by Warmonger's Diplomacy. And Hypothermia is okay against Lexi.
Well, you get three more Monger's Diplomacy, but if you have three Encase and you Encase them and you Encase their face down arsenal card, their turn cycle's over, right?
Well, okay, that in case it's pretty good against Lexi. That's
fair. Yeah. There you go. That's the reason why I was on three in case specifically. Yeah, because I don't think it does very much into any other matchups in the format. Like, Chain doesn't really care about activating equipment. Maybe if like you're encasing them and then you arsenal a secret hypothermia and then you go for a hypothermia to shut down their turn so they can't activate their shoes.
And encase is kind of good against Chain because it stops his hero power too, right? So it can't.
So yeah, encase is just good in the format. I like it more than yellow Aether Ice Vein at the very least.
That's fair. Yellow Aether Ice Vein was never good. It was like a necessary evil.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think there's merit for the hero. Do I think she's legitimately actually like best deck in a format or like actually like tier one? Probably not. But I think she's good. I think she's playable. I think she can take down tournaments if like people aren't expecting her or like not even expecting her, but like respecting her and haven't practiced the matchup. But I think getting ninth is like saying something about the hero, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think if the metagame is Chain and Lexi's with no trench, maybe that is a good spot for Ice Center to be in. And we saw no Starvas in the top eight. I don't think there were any Prisms in the top eight either. There might have been one. Prism's pretty tough for Ice Center as well, but
yeah,
quite tough actually.
I think they posted decklists.
Yeah, we'll have to look. Maybe there were Prisms in the top eight. If there were Prisms in the top eight, I'm sorry. Sorry, Prisms. I know there were a lot of Chains and at least one Lexi.
They have not posted the Battle Hardened decklist yet.
But shoutouts to our teammates, Brody Spurlock and Michael Fung, for meeting in the finals of the Battle Hardened. That's
copycats.
Cool. Two good copycats. Friends meeting in the finals of a Battle Hardened. That's quite an achievement.
They saw us do it, and they're like, no, we got to do that now. And they had to go and copy us.
Yeah.
We were the original best friends to meet in the finals of a Battle Hardened, Michael. They can't take that away from us.
Yeah.
And it's pretty crazy that happened to them though, because like once again it's just like, what are the odds? Like
not great, like, but
yeah, because they had still once again have to be paired on like opposite sides of the bracket, or no, same side of the bracket, or no, opposite sides of the bracket, and then also then win all their matches into the top eight, so or finals. Yeah.
And speaking of that Battle Hardened, Brody was also the one storytelling our Blood on the Clock Tower game that ended at 2:30 the night before.
He was so I don't like know how half he did it asleep. On no sleep.
After that night, we had dinner, and then he ran another Blood on the Clock Tower game that ended at like 2 in the morning that Sunday night. So I don't know how he does it. I need much more sleep than that.
You're also not 18.
I feel like I needed more sleep than that when I was 18, but I don't know. Maybe not.
When I was 18, dude, I was staying up for like 48 hours straight. Like, it was fine. No problem. Easy. You chug some Red Bulls. You take some stimulants. And you just stay up and have a grand old time.
I remember when I was that age and I stayed up too late, I just like brought a pillow to school and just like slept at school.
Hell yeah, dude. I slept through so many of my morning classes in high school. Oh, man. Like, if you were a morning class teacher in high school, you probably saw more of the back of my head face down on the desk than the actual, like, me looking up at the classroom.
All right. In case we have any youngins watching, this is not advice for your school life. This is just what we did.
If you're smart enough, you can get away with it. I think it's fine. As long as like your grades are okay, then like that's what like the ends justify the means, right? All's well that ends well. If you pass out and sleep through all your classes and fail, then you got to talk about that. But like if Austin was like sleeping through all of his high school classes and still bringing home A's and B's, I don't care. Whatever.
Yeah, I guess like I don't know, ultimately it's probably a failure of our school system if kids that are sleeping through classes can pass and kids that are trying can fail. It's not great, but
yeah, I don't know. America. So that was the Pro Tour in a nutshell. Pro Tour weekend. I guess the other notable news was Dromai is what, like 2 to 4 points short of Living Legend now that she's won the Pro Tour.
Yeah, congratulations to Arthur. What's his last name? our Dromai champion on winning the Pro Tour. I actually played against him in day two playing for our 3-0 of the draft pod, which he defeated me in the least close game of limited I played this weekend. He had a very, very strong KO deck and he played it very, very well. And I think he ended the game with like 12 life when I died, which that's a lot of life.
Yeah, I saw him smash you real good. I watched that game.
And then, yeah, he won the Pro Tour with Dromai, and she now has 996 of 100 points. Very likely to LL out the first weekend of ProQuest if she lasts that long. I think there's a couple opportunities for her to LL before then.
Okay. I just think it's amusing to me that I finally beat Dromai in the Classic Constructed Rated event. And then she Living Legends. It's just like, I finally climbed Mount Everest and Mount Everest Living Legends, you know?
Yeah, but for what it's worth, you'd probably struggle in a Dromai still, even though you've overcome it once. You probably wouldn't beat it all the rest of the time she fight it just because you beat her once.
Are you saying I got lucky, Michael?
No. I there's a lot of variance in card games, and you know, maybe it just won't go your way next time.
Fair enough.
If you need some reminders, I'm always happy to play a game or two of Dromai into Bolton. I really like playing Dromai in her 80% win rate matchups. I always find it a good time.
Yeah. So with Dromai leaving, we're down to Prism as the only illusionist until Mistvale comes out, and then we get the new Mistvale Mystic illusionist. So
yeah.
What do you think about the new Mistvale heroes that were spoiled over the weekend too?
I don't know. There's a lot that went down in that trailer.
Sexy trailer.
New seems like a hero, that's for sure. I think that we don't really know enough to really give strong opinions on what will be good or what the new heroes will even play like, really. They have some new resource. Mystic seems like the blue talent, which is kind of cool. I like blues, so I'm excited.
I thought Ice was the blue talent.
Ice isn't a blue talent. Ice is just ice, right? I guess ice is the blue element, but that's like lightning's the red element and Earth's the yellow. No, lightning's the yellow element and Earth is the red element from Aria. But like Draconic's red. So like ice is just an element. It can't be like it's not the talent of the pitch color because I guess light is yellow too. I don't know, man. I think Mystic looks blue based. We got two new spoilers that both care about blues and they're both Mystic cards. So
we'll see. Yeah. It doesn't matter really what they do because now that Dromai's gone, the shackles are off. 100% confirmed Bolton's best deck. I don't even care what those guys do. I don't even care what the Mystic card pools are. It doesn't matter. They're coming in into tier two right off the bat because Bolton's alone in S tier. Nothing's stopping him anymore. He's got no more bad matchups, just best deck, right?
How's your Hatchet Dorinthia matchup
on Sabres? How can you lose?
They just like hit you and you never deal damage to them.
You just 50 damage Lumina Ascension combo them.
Okay, if you say so.
I'm just saying, I don't know how it's any different than Kasai, right?
Well, I don't know if the Kasai matchup's as good as
Kasai's a buy for Saber. I don't know what you're talking about. It's fine.
I think maybe I'll play some two-handed warriors over here that are not bulleted, and I gotta see how these matchups are as bad as you say they are. I think this might I feel like this might be the thing where like everyone says their matchup into Dromai is so good, and then I play Dromai, and then Dromai just beats everything up.
I never said my matchup into. I always said I was can't ever beat Dromai. I'm honest, Michael.
Well, that wasn't that because like a year ago or something, I played Dromai games into you, and you're like, okay, maybe this matchup is bad.
Are you saying that we like played a Bolton v Dromai game where I was really confident in Bolton's ability on like some kind of other YouTube channel and that it was recorded for the world to see and watch for all of time and I somehow lost that game? Is that what you're claiming?
Oh, I do remember that three floating video, but I feel like we played more after that. That game was actually closer than a lot of our Bolton Dromai games have been, I feel like.
Yeah, I've learned so much since then. I've gotten so many new pieces of equipment, and none of it mattered because Dromite was still better.
But it's okay. You can keep proclaiming that Dromai is unplayable. Wait, that was before we had Toma the Imperial Flame.
It was. Oh. And four more Living Legend points, she will be literally unplayable in Classic Constructed. I was right That's all true. Along. I will be forever more right that she's unplayable.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
So back to the Mistvale Heroes quickly, though. So I thought it was really interesting that basically, James White did like the poll of the crowd by like applause, like who's excited for new? And I don't even remember what the stupid illusion's name is. Amoeba?
Enigma.
Enigma. Okay.
I couldn't tell you what the cat ninja is though.
Zen.
Oh, Zen.
Yeah.
No one was excited for Zen.
No one's excited for Zen, and I'm the most terrified of Zen out of any of them. I think just being able to activate like that hero ability. It's like, imagine if Katsu's ability wasn't tied to the on hit and it was just an activated ability you can just use. Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
Yeah, it costs those blue resources, and we'll have to see what those blue resources are. But
yeah
it does. I think all three of their abilities. Well, I don't even remember Nu's ability. Enigma's ability seemed kind of strong. Just make a shield, put a counter on it.
Nu's ability is that you get to take your opponent's blues from banish and cast them.
Oh yeah, that one seems not quite as strong as the other ones, unless there's some really good blues sitting in banish. But
yeah, we'll see. It combos with surgical extraction.
Yeah. I am really excited for some powerful blues though, because man, I've always wanted to play warrior, and I look at the warrior blues, I'm like, there's no playable blues. I can't play warrior.
Well, they spoiled those blue today, and they got two in the bottom right-hand corner, so.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay. Any final topics you want to talk about, Michael? Any points about the Pro Tour, life, anything?
All right, I'm telling y'all, no cast bones in your KO decks. You will win more games if you cut all the cast bones.
Yeah, be like Michael. Get them out of there. And not money the Pro Tour with your amazing build of the deck without cast bones.
I played so bad. You just have to play well with your no cast bones. You can't just punt away your games. You gotta cut the cast bones, and you gotta play well. That's the secret.
That does sound right. You also have to hit your not unwinnable matchups too.
You don't have any unwinnable matchups as KO. Your worst matchup's like one of the Warrior Bolton. Decks where you just get bailed out by rolling scav scans.
True. Oh, well. My final thought is going to be thank you to everybody who said nice things to me over the weekend about the podcast. Max, I think in particular, was really nice and excited to say hi. So I enjoyed that conversation with him. But there were just a lot of people over the entire weekend who were really appreciative of the content and that were making it again. And thank you to all the people who said something. I really appreciate it. And I hope to see all of you going forward too.
That's a much, much nicer final note than mine. So thank you also, everybody. I appreciated the kind words that I had. Though me and Roger were comparing numbers at the end of the day, and y'all talked to Roger. Nobody talked to me in comparing. Not nobody. I had some people talk to me, but Roger was very popular this weekend.
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, maybe you're just like the GOAT Michael Hamilton, too good at flesh and blood for mere mortals to approach. And I'm just like, yeah, Roger's the every guy. He sucks. He could talk to you. It's no big deal. But it is interesting, the disparity, because it's not just this weekend. I feel like in Hartford, I was like, I had a bunch of people come up to me and I was like, did anybody say anything to you? And you're like, not really. And I was like, I like talking to you, Michael. I'll always talk to you and tell you how much I like the podcast.
Oh, thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Okay.
Anytime.
I do appreciate those that did say something. And I am also glad you're doing the podcast again, Roger. I've been having a good time.
That's good. Are you having a good enough time? You do the sign off this week.
I do the sign off.
Yeah, okay. You do your quippy. Okay. I want to hear a Michael Hamilton quippy. Maybe if you do more quippies at the end of episodes, you'll get more people to approach you.
I don't know what a quippy is, but always remember, whenever you're doing quippies at the end of an episode, find your manners. We'll see you next time.